97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It is Joe Beamer filling in for Mark Reardon today and tomorrow, and it is great to be with you. It has been a while. Last time we spoke, sleepy Joe Biden was still the president, and I was fearing the worst was going to happen on Election Day. Well, Donald Trump is president once again. Everything is seeming to come together in this crazy world, for the most part, because as Donald Trump's the president, I'm also looking at Andrew Cuomo as the saner option in New York City. So what exactly is happening? Once one part of the crazy calms down, the other part steps right up. We'll get into that later in the show. Zoran Mamdani made a few comments this afternoon trying to distance himself from posts made a year ago. Now, I'm not one to say that your mind can't change, that you can become more educated on a topic, but this is a regular pivot and then pivot back that we're seeing from the political left in this country. So as I said, we will get there later in the show and have some clips of what Zoran Mamdani said. As for me, as I said, last time we talked, sleepy Joe Biden was still president. Just a few weeks ago, I got a promotion in Buffalo. I now have a daily show 6 days a week. You can hear this guy on the airwaves in Buffalo. I know that's a scary, scary thought. But let me tell you, being able to sleep in Monday through Friday, I mean, as much as you can with a two-year-old, is it's a heck of a time. I have not been able to sleep in over 10 years. When I worked retail, I didn't have to get up till 7. And it's been really nice spending mornings with the family and really having my mornings to myself, hoping to get back into tennis next week. Something I used to do when I had more time in the morning. So a few life changes for me here. But like I said, it's great to be on the air with everyone back in St. Louis. If you're online, yes, we are missing the camera feature. They did some changes in the studio that I usually use, and no one knows where they put the camera. So hopefully tomorrow, not that you want to see me, but I'm just saying, if you're online wondering why it's just the audio and not my face, that is because there is a mystery of where the Joe Beamer camera went here at the Odyssey Buffalo Studios. We're also following this breaking story that just broke a few hours ago. The St. Louis County executive, Sam Page, indicted by a grand jury today. He is charged with two counts of committing class 4 election offenses. Lots of words. One count of stealing $25,000 or more, and one count of stealing $750 or more. In the report from the grand jury, the election-related charges stem from, quote, purposely expanded public funds on a flyer to advocate the defeat or oppose the passage of a ballot measure on April 8th of this year. Now, later in the show, in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll be talking to Dennis Hancock. He is a St. Louis County Council member and the GOP candidate for St. Louis County Council Executive. He will react to this news, how we got here. Again, this all started with an investigation from the Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, and now a grand jury has agreed to indict the county executive. Now, I don't know how you feel about county executives. I don't, our county executive in Erie County, New York, I'm not a big fan of. I call it middle management, right? It's when people are trying to advance their political career, they stop at the county. No offense to county executives out there. I'm just saying that's how I view it. Like, it's a stopping point. No one gets into politics and says, hey, one day I will be county executive and that's where we'll stop. It's actually a really funny story about the county executive in Erie County, New York. This guy wanted to be congressman, right? He wanted to be congressman. But no one in his own party, his own Democrat party, no one likes him. It's amazing that he continues to win. So he made it public that he wanted to be in Congress. He wins re-election for county executive. And like 2 days after he wins, the congressman steps down and the party looks right through him and picks someone else. It is one of my favorite stories of all time, but that is my view on county executives. Again, it's a necessity. I'm just saying I view it as kind of middle management, but this is, you know, these are serious charges. I mean, we're talking about at least $25,750 taken from county funds to advocate against the passage of this ballot measure, which, by the way, I believe he got his way. But I mean, that's a serious crime. That could end a political career. And as we heard in the show prior, you know, there's already calls for this guy to resign and step down, Sam Page being his name. So that is a story, like I said, that we'll be following, and we'll be talking with a member of the St. Louis County Council later in the show. We're also going to be talking about this great economic news that came out today. It's interesting to me. Now, I am one of these people. I will talk about how awful the New York Times is, but every time they tell me I can get 6 months for a dollar, I'll do it because I want to be able to see what are the lies they're spreading. Why is my liberal aunt as uninformed as she is? Well, it's because she reads the New York Times, and the way they cover the economic news. If you looked at the Times, if you looked at CNN, MSNBC, even the local paper, because the local paper here is the same is the same company as the paper back home in Buffalo. They have to put you know, the numbers might be looking good, but what's buried in the good news? It's always, they can never have just a positive story. Anytime Trump is the center of the story, they've got to spin it. They've got to make it sound like it's the worst thing to ever happen. And if you had forgotten that during the first Trump, during the first term, if the last 4 years of Biden made you forget just how much you can't stand the mainstream media, my gosh, have the first 7 months of this second term reminded you how low they will go and how they will bend a story. Because every time CNN, Caitlin Collins goes out there, there's got to be a negative spin. Thankfully, our friend Scott Jennings will make sure he gets the truth out there. But if Scott's not involved, you can see just how left the coverage on CNN goes. And they were in full swing this morning. But we'll get that news to you, the economic news, and also Senator Hawley wanting to see the tariff rebate checks. We'll be talking about that later in the show. Also getting an update from the White House. President Trump is back from Scotland. His tariff deals. Again, you know, you can't find the liberal media giving any positive reaction to that, even though, you know, the deal with the EU, it's positive for America. That should be number one. You know, I'm seeing here in Buffalo, right on the border in Canada. And obviously the Canadians are upset with President Trump's 51st state talk. I'd like it because the wait at the border would be shorter. But, you know, the Buffalo Travel Committee, they have to go just anti-Trump to try to appease the Canadians. Now, these are the same people that didn't speak up when Canada closed their borders for 2 years, when homeowners, people who have vacation homes on the lake in Canada, couldn't get to their property, had to, you know, call someone they know in Canada and say, hey, can you check on my grass? Can you make sure my house is still there? So no one called out Canada then. The same people that want to crap all over America now because Trump's the president, nowhere to be seen during COVID. Nowhere to be seen telling Canada to reopen the border and let people in. You're killing business. But now it's you know, Buffalo hearts Canada. We don't stand with Trump. Come on, give me a break. You should be rooting for America first. If it's good for America, then it's good for you. That's how I stand. Either way, we have a great show for you. Sue is here as well with Sue's News in the 4 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that and looking forward to getting things started after this break. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, welcome back.
It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And 2 days ago, we had the shooting in Manhattan, and we're still learning more about that. And also the fallout from comments of people who are running for mayor. And to talk about all that, Bobby Chacon, retired FBI special agent. Bobby, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Let's start with the murderer who traveled from Nevada to New York City. Can you tell us about the weapon that this individual used in these killings?
Yeah, it looked like an AR-style assault rifle. I mean, I tend not to use that term, but that's the term that's being reported as. It's your standard M4, I think, which is, you know, kind of a military issue. When I was in Iraq, the FBI issued us M4s, the kind of law enforcement version of an M16. And so I'm not quite sure if this was a run-of-the-mill AR-15 or it was closer to an M4. It seems like he might have had a kit to build it or parts of it. These things are often assembled different ways and modified by people individually to their own specs in some cases, in a lot of cases. And so they have actually identified the guy that either purchased this weapon for him or with him or may have helped him kind of modify it to his own specifications.
Hey, Bobby, you know, we see that that camera picture of him walking casually down the street in Manhattan holding that gun. I mean, are you surprised that someone was able to just walk in? I mean, get the distance he did just holding that gun on his side?
No, not really. I mean, I'm a native New Yorker. My dad and brother were both NYPD. You know, at that hour of the night, New York is a very interesting place in that there's a lot of hustle and bustle. You know, a photograph is also just a really quick snapshot of something. He probably moved across that plaza very quickly. And it's you know, if people are getting off work in Manhattan, and this was a time when people are kind of getting off work and either meeting people after work or going home, they get their heads down. They're very seasoned commuters. They do the same commute every day. And you know, they just focus on getting home, you know, and oftentimes too, you see something like that and there's kind of a delay, you know, you're in shock and you're like, am I seeing what I'm seeing? Is that a prop? Is that a toy? You know, what is that? And so there's that kind of initial delay and that's all it takes for a gunman hell bent on murdering people is that slight delay for people to go, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing, what my brain is telling me I'm seeing? So I think if you combine all of those factors together, it doesn't surprise me that he was able to double park, quickly walk across that plaza, get in that lobby, and then, you know, you just start shooting. I mean, unfortunately, Manhattan is, you know, a very dense city. There's people everywhere. You know, you don't have to go very far or shoot in any single direction, and you're going to hit a lot of people.
So now we're talking about, you know, getting the evidence. You've got people in Nevada, you've got in New York. What does an investigation that goes across state lines, what does this look like? You know, I mean, the murderer, I mean, he's dead. So what are the steps that are being taken now as we speak?
So I think that there's a couple of avenues being pursued. So, you know, there's the physical evidence. So I think they want to, you know, number one, recreate his route. They want to go to Nevada where they know he was last seen before he started this quote unquote trip to New York. And so they have little bits and pieces along the way. And that's through, like, you know, license plate readers and toll booth readers, things like that. So they're going to piece that together and then try to fill in the dots in between the pieces that they know. And so you get a larger, more accurate picture of this trip that he was on. Did he stop anywhere? Did he, you know, associate with anybody along the way or whatever? And so that's what they're doing now. They're like almost physically recreating that trip. That's one avenue that they're also doing the standard background investigations, talking to his family, his friends, his coworkers, you know, any acquaintances that he had there. You know, that's another avenue. The third is they're looking at his online presence, his digital footprint, as they say nowadays. So they're looking at who he associated with online, what his search history was, what he was looking up on his computer and those type of things. So all of these things are going on simultaneously to really determine motive, because we know what he did and how he did it. So those are not kind of mysteries anymore. as they are usually in a case. This, you know, the only real mystery remaining is why. And so they have his note that was found next to his body that kind of indicates a few whys. They don't make complete sense given his history and what we know about him so far. His anger at the NFL is a little misplaced, it seems, because he obviously never played in the NFL. I'm not even sure he came close to playing in the NFL. So this thing about him having CTE, which is that concussion syndrome that a lot of NFL players come down with or came down with prior to, you know, the increased safety features that the NFL has acquired through better helmets and different rules and things like that. So, you know, the whys, you know, and I'm not a why guy. I investigate a lot of homicides in the FBI, mostly gang and mafia related, which are federal crimes. The whys were not usually something we spent a whole lot of time on because they were not an element of the crime. You don't have to prove why somebody murdered somebody. You just have to prove that they did the murder. In most cases, you exempt things like hate crimes and things like that. But for the most part, most homicide statutes don't have a why requirement. It's not an element of the crime. But you do want to know that because, you know, are similar people situated who might carry out similar attacks and things like that. So there's always a desire to know, but we never had to use that in court. We never had to get evidence of the why. But, you know, because in cases like this where he, you know, now they're reporting he has a history of mental illness or mental issues, the why is usually an irrational reason anyway. So even if you do find it out, it usually doesn't make sense to us rational thinking human beings.
Bobby, you know, obviously this is happening as there is a mayoral election. And I mean, police have come up in this election. Let's play clip 13. You've got a guy running for mayor who's said things along the lines of this.
When we talk about defund the NYPD, the entirety of the push is defund the NYPD and refund all of these different social services and things that actually create safety.
When you see something like this happen and you have a guy running for mayor who just a year ago was saying stuff like that, I mean, how dangerous is that idea in a place like New York City?
It's hugely dangerous, Joe. I mean, if I still lived in New York, which I did most of my life, I'd be frightened to death of candidates like this who get in office. And what are you going to do in a situation like this? You're going to have a team of mental health professionals respond to this guy carrying an M4 around, shooting people, and what are they going to do, talk him out of it? It's ridiculous. Now there are arguments for teams like that, but they work in conjunction. And I know, like Kings County up in Washington, at Seattle has things like that. There are departments that are pushing the envelope with that kind of stuff, but they are an adjunct. They're a supplement to the police department. They're not in place of, and never will be in place of, the police department, because there are people with mental health issues that don't want to be addressed and are hell-bent on causing violence no matter what you do. And the only one standing between them and the violence they're going to inflict on innocent civilians is uniformed police officers. And that's going to be the case. And you're not ever going to kind of work your way out of that with policies. These paradigms that they're coming up with mental health teams responding instead of police are a recipe for getting more of your civilians, more of your citizens killed and injured.
Yeah, I'm talking to you from Buffalo, New York, where the pro-police Democrat mayor just lost a primary to the defund the police New York senator. And it's scary times. It's scary that there are people out there that actually think that's the way to go.
Yeah, it's absolutely astounding to me. And, you know, on one hand, I'm like, you know, have at it. You know, you'll reap what you sow, and you'll come running back to, you know, wanting the police there first thing as soon as you call them. And maybe you need to be, you know, taught a lesson by yourself. If that's what you want, then live under those conditions and see how that works out for you. It's not, I'm telling you, you know, my father was a police officer in New York City in the 50s, 60s, 70s. My brother was in the 80s and 90s. I was an FBI agent in New York City in the 80s and 90s. It's not going to work that way. These people that are hell-bent on violence are not going to respond to a mental health professional team showing up. Now, is there a place for them? Yes. But it's certainly not what these people, what these politicians now are trying to push. It will not work. The one thing it will accomplish is getting more innocent civilians killed and injured.
Yeah. Hey, Bobby, really appreciate you joining us. Good stuff, man.
Anytime, Joe. Thanks for having me.
That is Bobby Chacon, retired FBI special agent, talking about the shooting in Manhattan and also, I mean, the words of Zohra Mahdani, who is the leading candidate going into November, who just a year ago was talking about defunding the police. Well, you heard that clip, and we'll talk about more of that later in the hour. When we come back, we'll be talking about some changes at the EPA after this. In for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk, and we are going to take a look at the EPA with geologist and executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Virginia, Tech VPI, Gregory Wrightstone. Greg, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good to be on with you. And once again, we have more really good news coming out of Washington, D.C. I'm not tired of winning yet, but it's I was tired of losing regularly over the last 4 years. The last 6 months have been a complete turnaround.
They sure have. Now, you're talking about the Lee Zeldin, who was very close to being governor of New York, announced a plan to undo the holy grail of climate change science. Explain to us first, what was the holy grail of climate change science?
It's what we call the endangerment finding. And in 2009, the Obama EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, decided in a ruling that carbon dioxide, the gas that we call the miracle molecule, they call it the demon molecule. They determined that carbon dioxide that you're breathing out right now was a pollutant, and it could be regulated by the EPA and other agencies. And boy, have they. They have used this ruling that carbon dioxide is a pollutant to regulate virtually everything that uses the electricity or generates CO2 in your lives. Just look around your listeners right now. They're probably sitting in their home with their air-conditioned home. Look around. Look above you to your ceiling fan, your dishwasher, your washer and dryer, virtually everything that uses electric. You're only allowed now, because of this, to buy government-approved dishwashers, washers, dryers, ceiling fans, refrigerators. We go on and on. And they have to be government-approved. They're more expensive. They're less efficient. But that's what we're forced to buy. It's like living in the old Soviet Union. The government tells you what you may and may not buy. And it's because of this desire to regulate carbon dioxide. They say they thought it was contributing to unusual and unprecedented dangerous warming. And there's nothing of the sort. And when they made this ruling, again, this was in 2009, they did not consider any contrary information, the facts, science, and data that would dispute this notion. And that's been overturned last year, 2024, two Supreme Court rulings said from now on, these agencies to make these rulings have to consider all of the pertinent information, including those that go against the carbon dioxide as a pollutant. And the facts are overwhelming of the huge benefits we're seeing to ecosystems and to the human condition because of more CO2. It's a really, really good story we're learning about the huge benefits that we're seeing, both to the ecosystems and to humanity. And so this was huge. Your listeners during the Obama and Biden administration, the EPA, Department of Energy, and others have been systematically stripping your listeners of their freedoms to choose. And I'm very much pro-choice. And by that, I mean, I'm pro-choice in that your listeners should have the choice of what kind of car to drive, what kind of dishwasher to buy, if they should have the choice to buy a shower head where water comes out of it at a decent rate and not a trickle. These little things, we've had our freedom stripped away. We hardly recognized it. Hopefully we'll get back now, and this will lead to more efficient appliances, lower-cost appliances, and get the government out of the way. Let us make our decisions on our own behalf and not have the government make them.
So now this is being repealed, like you said, those appliances, efficient appliances, can start being made and start being distributed, to most states, unless you live in certain states where the governor has taken taken control. This has been announced as repealed. So, I mean, we can start.
Not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. They will be rolling this out. They're announcing they're going to be rescinding it. And then that will be officially put out for the record next week, we believe. And then there will be a 45-day commenting period, which we're preparing our one of the downsides with his announcement yesterday was that they're not including any of the science that disputes that CO2 is a pollutant. They're only going the legal ramifications, and they explained that they needed to do it that way. But we're here at the CO2 Coalition, we're the preeminent scientific organization with nearly 200 of the top scientists and experts in the world, and so we, in our comment, it will be quite detailed. And we will explain in our comment the science that disputes this contention of harmful CO2 additions, and it's likely this is just the beginning. The 45 days will go through, and let's say that it does get rescinded. You know for sure the next thing's coming are lawsuits, and it's entirely likely that this will end up in the Supreme Court and being decided there. Which I would anticipate a favorable ruling, but we've structured our comment, and our comment we're going to do here is we're working with our senior legal team to devise this comment for use and expecting to take this to the Supreme Court, where our scientists can argue the scientific case for this, which would be wonderful.
You know, it seems like a lot of the stuff that was done, let's say during the Obama years, in the name of the environment, was, quote, because of science. And then when anyone pushes back on it, that person is shamed. That person, it seems like that was a theme when it comes to the environment during the Obama administration, that there was no such thing as opposing science allowed in Washington, D.C.
That was. Didn't we see that in the COVID debate?
Where
anyone with an opposing viewpoint silenced? There is no debate. There's a consensus. And that's what they're saying about the climate change. If you thought it was bad with COVID, you ain't seen nothing yet, brother. This climate change debate, they've silenced me and my colleagues at the CO2 Coalition for providing the science that disputes this notion of a climate crisis, man-made climate crisis. And it's consensus science is just wrong. That's not how science is done. In fact, my favorite quote about consensus was Dr. Richard Feynman, the noted Nobel laureate in physics. And get this. Think about this. He said, I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned. And that's what we have today, don't we? We're being told the answer, and you dare not question me. You dare not speak out. You must be silent. And if you're going to contest us, we're going to silence you. And that's what they've done pretty effectively. Well, the worm has turned, and we've got the wind at our backs. We were facing stiff headwinds over the last two decades and more. But the wind's at our back now. We've got friends in D.C. like Lee Zeldin, Chris Wright at Department of Energy, Doug Burgum in Interior, and others that are pushing back against this overreaching regulatory state, and it's about time.
So, you know, Gregory, I got to ask you. I'm talking to you from the great state of New York, where they're going to stop fossil fuel hookups to houses in January and want everyone to have an electric car by 2035. What do you say to states like this that are just doing their own thing and really, you know, limiting the choice of the taxpayer?
Yeah, I'm not sure what can be done about that. There are such things as state rights, and I'm no legal expert. I do believe something will be done. New York and New Jersey have both banned pipelines, natural gas pipelines, and that's a huge problem because we've got the largest natural gas accumulation in the world by far. I mean, by far, it's gargantuan. The Marcellus and Utica shale fields of Pennsylvania and northern West Virginia. And we can't get that gas to New England where it's needed because New York and New Jersey have banned pipeline construction. And I think it will be argued at some point that this inhibits interstate commerce, but that's not been raised yet. But, you know, New England right now is paying, they're paying 4 to 5 times too much per MCF of gas is what the rest of the country is. And that's because they're having to import liquefied natural gas from Saudi Arabia, from Algeria, from other Spain and other places that are much more expensive. And that's compounded by the fact is that they can't buy LNG from Louisiana and Texas because of this thing called the Jones Act, where you have to use American flagged tankers and American crude tankers between one American port and another. There aren't any American flagged or American crude LNG tankers. So they're forced by this stupid Jones Act to buy really expensive gas from other countries. It's just stupid. And I've been encouraging Chris Wright and Donald Trump for many months now. So he can waive the Jones Act and cure that overnight. He can do it today.
He is Gregory Wrightstone, a geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. Gregory, really appreciate the conversation.
Oh, good to be on. Let's do it again.
We'll do. That's Gregory Wrightstone, again, a geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Virginia, where I will be in just over a month for my beloved Virginia Tech Hokies home opener. When we come back, we're going to go back to the New York City thing, talk about Mamdani and just, again, trying to run away from his past statements. But we've seen this, and we're seeing it where I am right now, where the mayoral candidate who just won a primary is the defund the police guy. Can you believe we're still talking about this 5 years, 6 years after we first after it was first put out there by the political left? That and much, much more. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Great to be back on in St. Louis. It's been a while. It's been a president ago. Like I said in the opening, Sleepy Joe was president last time I was on the air here. And appreciate it. Always appreciate when I get the email. I'm always will be available when called upon. So my show in Buffalo, which is entering its fifth week already. I mean, time flies when you're having fun. My daily show in Buffalo, it's an afternoon show now. Last time we talked, I was on in the morning. But my co-host, he's still doing the early morning thing. And now I'm on in the afternoon. And on Wednesdays, I have a Democrat join me. We call it Wednesdays with a Democrat. And so far, we've been able to fill the segment. Now, the leading candidate for mayor in Buffalo will not talk to our station. The county executive won't talk to our station because these are children. These are children who they don't have the maturity to talk with people who disagree with them. And, you know, hey, that's fine because we do have Democrats who will come on and want to debate the topics. And that's great. Today on my show in Buffalo, we had the supervisor from Cheektowaga, which is a suburb, and he is a proclaimed Democratic socialist. However, he has woken up, he claims, on the defund the police. He never ran on that, and that's not something that he has said. But a lot of the stuff that he said is very, in line with Mamdani, this talk of universal health care and, claiming that Trump is kicking people off of Medicaid. He says, if you want this and this, and the government should be there. I mean, it's really, if you look at the Mamdani campaign and these quote Democratic Socialists, the Working Families Party, I mean, these are people who honestly believe that the government should just hold your hand through life. And that no one should be poor. Now, I don't want it to see anyone be poor, right? I also don't want to incentivize sitting on your butt all day doing nothing. And, to hear some of these Democrats push back on the able-bodied people who don't have a dependent under the age of 14. Oh my gosh, you have to work 20 hours? That sounds like a pretty good week to me. You have to work 20 hours to get your Medicaid. And, you've got the governor of New York, you've got Cory Booker screaming on the Senate floor yesterday. I'm just going absolutely crazy over this. And is their whole thing, and I asked this, and of course the answer I got was just a talk around, there is the Democrats' whole thing that they want everyone to be dependent on the government. That's what they want. They want everyone to be dependent on Kathy Hochul and AOC and all these Democrats. They want to hold your hand. And, you know, if you want to work, that's fine. But if you don't work, hey, we'll give you everything. And I've never understood that thought. Again, being in a border town, the amount of Ontario license plates you see at American hospitals because the wait time to get necessary surgery is months and months and months, and people don't have months and months and months. They don't want to be in agony popping pain pills for months and months and months. So they drive into America and come to our hospitals. We have top-of-the-line care. Do you want to do away with that? And again, I don't want to see people dying on the streets. Of course not. I don't think it's crazy to say, hey, if you want to have Medicaid, if you want to be insured and you're able-bodied, get off your butt and do something for 20 hours a week. I think that's pretty generous. But I don't think the job of the government is to get as far out of my life as possible, not to hold my hand and do everything I can't do for me. You have way too many people that just abuse the system. And then we're the suckers that are not only funding our health insurance and our families, we're funding families of people who are 100% able to go out and make a living themselves. Now, I don't mean someone who yesterday got fired and, you know, they fall on some hard times. That's fine. I mean, when you make it your life's plan and for years and years and years, your main thing is how can you win, you know, beat the government today? How can you suck more out of the government today? And there are too many people who for the last two or three decades have been able to abuse the system. And the fact that the current administration wants to put a stop to that. Oh, yeah. And also make sure that the millions of people here illegally don't have another incentive to stay here or to bring more illegals in. Kick them off of Medicaid, of course. I will never understand the pushback. Again, before Trump wanted it, Democrats called for it. Bill Clinton was out there in the 90s. With a work incentive for Medicaid. He was also talking about how we have to secure our borders. But as soon as Trump says something, it's a 180. Complete flip. God forbid we stand with Trump. So we'll get more on Mondani later in the show. But it's the fact that we are still talking about this democratic socialist mindset in more cities than just New York. I don't know. I think the country's turning in some places and then in other places, it hasn't caught up. More after this. It's Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.